The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to Radio Wasteland, your show about the paranormal, the unexplained, and the nefarious. Your regular host, Chauncey, is off tonight. He was kidnapped by mysterious agents of the Shadow Government and is currently undergoing re-education at one of their many convenient secret outposts. He'll be back next week, although he will not be the same. My name is Sean, but lest you worry that my voice will be monopolizing your eardrums for the coming hour, don't. We're not alone. Author and recurring guest William Pullen from UFO Real was kind enough to come on with us here. He'll be discussing the recent Roswell Festival and other topics related to UFOs. William, do we have you on here with us?
I am here. And that,
fantastic.
That scenario you just described sounds like something out of Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, you know, it's kind of an occupational hazard for us. Yeah, conspiracy theory radio host, you know. You say the wrong thing, and then, you know, someone with an earpiece and mirror shades is tapping you on the shoulder and ushering you into a van with tinted windows. But, you know,
you guys are crazy clumsy about all that, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, we all know the risks, to be clear to any of our audience who might be convinced by what I just said. That is all a joke. I don't know where he is. He told me, but it wasn't very interesting, so I didn't assimilate that knowledge. He's on the road. I don't know.
Well, anyway, we get to have him back next week. So.
Yes, we will. Re-educated and ready to spout the Illuminati party line.
You might be more right than you think. I don't know.
Maybe. As I said, I don't actually know where he is, so I might be coincidentally right about all of that.
Perhaps.
All right, well, I do appreciate you coming on here. You know, it occurs to me we really should have had you on last week, because I just found out today, 1 week ago, was World UFO Day, which I did not know at the time, but it would have been appropriate.
Yeah, it's. I wasn't aware of that date until about 5 years ago.
Really?
I've still yet to...
July 2nd, yeah.
Yeah, hear a definitive answer as to... well, let me rephrase that. I've heard several explanations as to why that date is World UFO Day. And okay. none of them sounded really firm, so I just kind of go with it. But I'm with you. I didn't really know about it until recently. So,
okay, I just have to say, I love that because it is just so thoroughly typical that no one knows where this date came from. And there are varying theories, but none of them are all that convincing. Like,
no,
that's just perfectly apropos for a UFO day.
Yeah, it sounds like individuals trying to explain a certain UFO sighting.
Exactly.
Which will remain unnamed, but it's called Roswell. There's a whole list of explanations, but for me personally, every day is UFO day.
Well, so. that is true. And I do want to launch into the Roswell stuff in the next segment here, but... since this first segment is usually just warming up the radio and all that, I just want to ask you, before we move on, a question that's been on my mind. So, I'm a pretty amateur ufologist here, if you can, you know, really even call me that. I've only really been following what's going on in UFO land for about a year. So it seems to me, as a layman, that 2018 is a pretty unprecedented year in terms of the willingness of mainstream news outlets to report on UFO-related events without... you know, feeling the need to code everything they say in a thick layer of irony or ha-ha, this is just a joke style reporting. I'm wondering, do you think we're seeing a paradigm shift here in the way organizations report on UFO research, or is this just kind of a temporary blip?
Well, you know, it's definitely been a problem through history that the UFO issue has not been treated seriously by media outlets, the major media outlets, certainly here in the United States. So that's changed as of late.
Exactly.
About the last calendar year. I think it'll keep going in that direction. It seems that the media outlets, the major media outlets, have really made an effort to treat it with more respect. I don't know if that's going to lead to anything else beyond that, but it's definitely a refreshing change from what's been going on for 60-some-odd years where reporters report this issue with a tongue-in-cheek approach.
Right. I can only imagine. And you've been following this for how long at this point?
Since the late 80s.
Since the late 80s. So, you've had your share of not being taken seriously, I can only assume.
Oh, sure, yeah. I've been attacked and ridiculed at times. I just blow it off. I mean, it is what it is. It's a situation that really isn't going to change. But having, I'll use this term loosely, journalists cover the UFO issue as seriously as they would any other issue, that's a refreshing change. Whether that leads to anything else, we shall see. But it's nice to turn on a TV and see a serious UFO-related story as opposed to a story that's garners laughter in the studio after the story's done. So it's a good change, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think has kicked that off? Is it mostly the Washington Post story last year, or you were saying last calendar year, so even before that, it sounds like you're saying this has been changing.
I got a feeling that there were some outlets that were, I guess I could put it this way, it's been a gradual shift. I recall I saw a story on Fox News 4 or 5 years ago where they ran a story on the anniversary of the Pascagoula abduction, which was in, I think, October of 73. They ran a story on the anniversary of that UFO sighting. I'd never seen a UFO story seriously reported on Fox News.
Interesting.
So that transpired. But then all the media coverage around the Pentagon UFO story and all the surrounding issues around that came late last year, and that really that has certainly at least made the issue more approachable in a serious way.
Right.
I think that really,
when reading about the 2004 sightings, the grainy black and white Tic Tac videos, those three videos, I'm just continually surprised reading those and having the article seemingly be completely serious. Like, for me, who's not been following this, it's extremely surreal to just look at my daily news and find people reporting seriously on UFOs.
Yeah, it's a total huge debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I take the UFO issue very seriously myself.
Of course, yeah.
I'm not used to seeing it reported seriously, like it has been as of late. And it's a welcome change, regardless of whether the story comes out to be, whatever the explanation is for the story, it's still an unidentified flying object, and it's being reported as seriously as an economic crisis or a terrorist act or what have you. That's a refreshing change compared to the last 60 years. That's a big deal. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned earlier whether or not that leads to anything else. By anything else, do you mean like a broader disclosure by governments, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever develops and transpires after this, I'm a cautious person, so I'll wait and see what happens. But it's at least the coverage has changed. Whether that ends up with a kind of a snowball effect and other things transpire beyond that, that'd be great. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. We're coming up on our first break here. When we come back, I want to ask about the Roswell Festival and everything that went on there. You all are listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
My mom loves shopping at Orchard Nutrition Center. Her motto, you are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. She says that all the time. Mom loves all the local veggies. And Dad, he likes meat. Orchard carries locally grown, 100% grass-fed beef. Dad's even eating healthy, and he doesn't even know it. If you haven't been to Orchard Nutrition, you owe it to yourself and the ones you love. It all starts at Orchard Nutrition Center in the Cypress Square Shopping Center. Open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. I thought it would be fun to have you hear from some of our residents what life is like here at River Commons. I asked Jean, Rosalie, Gordon, and Sherry to share their thoughts.
Living here at River Commons is something I never even imagined or dreamed of. It's sort of like being on a vacation where you don't have to worry about doing anything and you have people taking care of you, looking out for you. The food is like being on a cruise ship, as my daughter puts it.
Home. It feels homey to me. Only better. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean.
Been here 8 years. It's been fantastic. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
This is my home. The parties and the activities are great. I love living here. I wouldn't live anyplace else.
Call today and schedule a tour or luncheon a tour and see for yourself why our residents love living here at River Commons. Call 221-2121 or on the web at river-commons.com.
This is Carl Bott, and I'm with Dan Scott of Eagle Eye Painting. And Dan's doing all the painting in our new studios. Dan, you've been doing this for 20 years. What should people be looking for at this time of the year?
Peeling paint, moisture in their wood, moisture in their stucco would be a couple things to look for. And then they know it's time to paint.
You've got, with 20 years in the business, where are some of the places you've been working at around here?
I've painted Riverview Golf and Country Club, SJ Denim, Market Street Steakhouse. Those are just a few I've painted.
The thing I like about Eagle Eye Painting is when you give an estimate, That estimate stays there. It doesn't change halfway through the job.
No, there's no variation in my proposal. I have confidence in my numbers, and I stick to those. DanScottPainting.com, 530-400-5152. Eagle Eye Painting, a clear vision of craftsmanship. Eagle Eye Painting.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at boomertechradio.com, and the show is streamed live at kcnr1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trends. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile found sometime last week.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We're talking with William Pullen about the Roswell Festival and all other things UFO. Yes, that's right. We're covering literally every UFO-related topic in this hour, so stay tuned. William, you were at... Yeah, may have bitten off more than I can chew there, but don't tell anyone that.
No. We're good. I really don't mind talking about UFOs, so...
Right. Well, that's perfect. So you were at the Roswell Festival this last weekend. Is that right?
New Mexico. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I'm actually not too familiar with the Roswell Festival. I'm familiar with AlienCon. Is this a similar sort of setup? Speakers, panels, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it pretty much is. The speakers / presenters are organized by the UFO Museum there in Roswell.
I see.
And the remainder of the events are organized by the city. Mm-hmm. So it's like two entities working together loosely hand in hand to produce the festival. But it's kind of the same scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how was it? I'm jealous. I wish I could have gone.
It was great. It was great. I don't do any of the festivities outside the museum.
Mm-hmm.
I just attend as many presentations as I can and talk
right.
with these authors or researchers, some of which are really good friends that I see once a year.
Yeah.
So, it came out great. It was a wonderful, the festival was 3 days. But my good friend Don Schmidt arrived basically a week before the festival. So I got to talk to him and spend some time with him before the festival started.
Right. I wanted to ask you about his research in the next segment coming up here, so hold that thought. Yeah, well, it looks like we had a pretty impressive list of guest speakers at the conference. You know, you've got Stanton Friedman, who's the original civilian investigator at Roswell, Stephen Bassett, lots of big names. Are there any highlights from the conference that, that really stood out to you while you were there?
Well, on a personal note, I'd never met in person Stephen Bassett. And I cordially disagree with his stance on disclosure. I don't feel it's going to happen, and he feels it is. And we've exchanged emails before, but I met him in person, attended his presentation Sunday morning, and that was very interesting. The Stanton Friedman retirement ceremony, which was basically all weekend, was very emotional, especially toward the end.
Yeah.
But it was a series of great moments of memories. So it's a wonderful weekend. I'm already counting the days till next year. So
Yeah, those were just the two names that kind of popped out at me when I was perusing the guest list. But what were some of the various topics that were being discussed in these presentations? Was it like people presenting their research?
Well,
Ted Pima
was, as he's been speaking about, the idea of how these extraterrestrials are conquering the vast distances it takes to get here to Earth. He's taken an astronomical approach. Don Schmidt and Tom Carey were covering a lot of the issues surrounding the cover-up of the event. Frank Kimbler, who works, he's a professor of geology at North New Mexico Military Institute up the street from the museum. He strictly takes a scientific approach to recovering or attempting to recover physical evidence from the debris field.
Nice.
And his presentations reflect that. So it runs the whole gamut, but each speaker had a different take on the general scenario of Roswell. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I've always kind of wondered about the first topic you mentioned, the conquering the vast distances and involved in that sort of thing. Is that something that ufologists can reasonably come up with conclusions about? I always got the impression that it was something that was just beyond the scope of what we knew about these sightings at this point, that we couldn't even begin to guess. But,
well, I guess since none of us are extraterrestrials and we don't have any, we believe none of us are, we'll see what happens to that. But since we haven't conquered the stars, we haven't traveled to anywhere other than our own moon, we have no perspective. We are blissfully unaware of the technology that they have. But Mr. Friedman is a nuclear physicist, so he's, as far as his education and his background, he's very qualified to speak on astronomical issues such as distance, speed, time, those kind of variables. So, so he's one of the ufologists in the UFO community is very qualified to speak in that direction. And I think that's why he focuses on that a bit, because he has a different perspective as opposed to some other researchers that focus on different things. So,
interesting.
Well, it makes him a case for it.
Yeah, well, what did he have to say about that? Did he have any theories as to how it's possible?
He basically said a lot of scientists are chauvinistic toward the human race. They apply our standards to the ETs, saying, well, they can't, how do they get here from there? If you travel closer and closer to the speed of light, your ship gets heavier and heavier, which means it takes infinite energy to drop your ship, which is theoretically an impossible scenario. But you can't throw away the data. The data shows that alien visitation is happening. So somehow they're getting here. But a lot of scientists in the main scientific community are blissfully, they're unaware of UFO data. So they're making statements that are, for lack of a better term, ignorant. Because when you make a statement, when a scientist certainly does, makes a statement about a scenario where that scientist has not done the background to become aware of the data surrounding that scenario, their statement is an error, or can be an error, or certainly ignorant of what's transpiring. So, whereas Mr. Friedman is very aware of the vast majority of the data, and so certainly somehow they're getting here. And it remains to be seen how, but Freeman has, Stanton has a pretty open mind as to the possibilities. And a lot of scientists assume, well, we can't get there. How can they do that? They're assuming that their level, that BET's level of technology is the same as ours, or the age of their civilization is the same as ours. Right. Those are variables we have no idea about. So, but clearly they're visiting. So somehow they're getting here, and we don't know how.
Right.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big point. Good point that you bring up there, that in a way, not being familiar with all of this data is detrimental to mainstream science as well, because if you're someone who's thinking about physical issues like FTL travel and things related to that, then you can't discount, hey, there's good evidence that there are other creatures who have mastered these technologies. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I recall... I recall back in the 70s, Carl Sagan and J. Allen Hynek, Dr. Hynek, had a debate, and I can't recall the forum. It was on television, network television. Mm-hmm. And Carl Sagan was attempting to sweep away the data using theories that had no data to back them up.
Right.
So he was making ignorant statements, and Dr. Hynek was simply saying, look, we have quality data, voluminous amounts of data that have to be explained. And the theories Mr. Sagan was putting forth wasn't explaining the data. So he was just throwing out ideas, which certain scientists in the mainstream do, and a few don't. A few of them actually are aware of the data and make more informed statements and more informed speculations as to what might be happening. So,
right. Yeah, the data is definitely more compelling than... You know, if you're a typical scientist, probably you think, I don't have to be familiar with this because I already know there's nothing there because none of my colleagues are taking it seriously. And it's just this vicious cycle of people not taking the data seriously because they think they don't have to.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. Yeah, they're assuming they're going with the status quo of the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. They're not taking it seriously. So they just brushed away.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about in the first segment that changing a little bit in the media. Now I'm just going off of that. We're getting off topic, but I don't care. Have you seen any signs of that changing in the mainstream scientific community? Because it seems like that's a pretty hard nut to crack. I haven't seen a lot of change in there.
Physicist, I'm going to butcher his name, Michio Kaku.
I believe
that's the name,
yeah.
How you pronounce it.
Love that guy.
He makes pretty objective statements about the UFO phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
He entertains potentialities. He does not brush away the data. And I've heard him make statements basically making the case that we don't know what's out there. Therefore, we can't assume or make any statements of fact concerning what's out there because we don't know. We don't know how advanced they are. We don't know who they are. We don't know how they get there. We can't assume anything because that's an uninformed statement. And that's something some other scientists, and I have their names in my head, won't say. They brush away the data. They brush
right.
away. They say, well, where are they all? Where's this, that, and the other? And that's fine. Everyone has their own opinion, but it's okay being skeptical. I'm a skeptic myself, but a skeptic as far as when I hear something, I want to see the data. And if the data shows something anomalous happened, I'm there. I'm good. Let's investigate it.
Yeah.
But some skeptics are hardened and refuse to look at the data at all. That's not healthy for anybody. So,
mm-hmm.
But if the media takes the UFO issue more seriously, then hopefully the scientific community will start to take it more seriously. And that's been a big issue. The UFO community and the whole UFO issue is not taken seriously by anybody, including some individuals in the UFO community. It's horrible. And hopefully that'll change. It needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're coming up on our next break here. I want to ask you in the next segment about Donald Raymond Schmidt, who couldn't be here tonight, but his research sounds really fascinating, and I want to know a little bit about it.
Okay.
So, yeah, when we come back, Donald Raymond Schmidt.
Throughout the academic world, the medical world, it is known throughout the Air Force that the Air Intelligence has in its
to find objects traveling, we believe it was seen. it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460. Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Summertime is fun time in Northern California. We're Billy and Patrick with your personal invitation to have more fun in a brand new Kia from Renting Kia, your official summertime fun headquarters.
Celebrate this summer with no payments for 90 days in a new 2018 Kia Niro. This sporty 50-mile-per-gallon crossover hatchback hybrid is showing up everywhere in NorCal.
I've got one. I love it.
And nothing says summer like the 2018 Kia Soul. That's the cool crossover that sits up nice and high, has tons of storage. And like all Kias, it's America's best value. We have a Soul, and it's perfect.
The 2019 all-wheel drive Kia Sorento is here. There's room for your camping gear. It has power for towing and is at home on or off-road.
Get yours today and make no payments until fall.
No cost. Lifetime oil changes and tire rotations are yours when you take home your new Kia from Redding Kia, proud sponsor of community events like the Mosquito Serenade.
Finance offer on approval of credit ends 8/10/2018. Redding Kia, reddingkia.com.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear, but directly from the lab. That means you get it faster, and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab, faster for less.
Received news that Chlorina and Sludge have been captured for impersonating spring water. Let's now go to our field reporter, Ulza Wett.
Once again, Bob the Drop saves the world from fake water and... Oh, here's Bob now. Bob, do you have anything to say?
Well, Chlorina and Sludge from Tapopolis are the worst. Why would you want wannabe water when you can have the best-tasting water delivered right to your door? Anyone can get Mount Shasta spring water if they call us at 1-800-922-6227.
Pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
What does it take to be called the best of the North State? More importantly, what does it take to be called the best in the North State 12 years in a row? It takes a business ownership, management, and staff that work together to let their customers know that they're not just customers, they're family. Since 1982, Orchard Nutrition Center has held to that commitment. Their commitment to bring to you the best possible products at the lowest possible prices. To never buy closeouts, overstocks, outdated, improperly formulated, or otherwise stressed merchandise. To provide you with a trained professional staff to help you make the right product decisions for the health of you and your family. To listen, to respond, and to always say thank you. Because we realize that we're all in this together. What does it take to be called the best in the North State 12 years in a row? It takes you. Thank you. From everyone at Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We're speaking with William Pullen about the Roswell Festival and all things UFO. So, William, you mentioned earlier Donald Schmidt. I always want to say Donald Raymond Schmidt. I don't know why I want to say all three of his names, but it just rolls off the tongue really well.
Sounds very formal.
Exactly, it does. Donald Raymond Schmidt, yes. So he was a panelist at this this festival, and you mentioned on Facebook that you were looking for the opportunity to share some thoughts about his research here. I admit I'm not particularly familiar with his work, but what is it exactly that he's been doing?
Well, I'm Well, Stan Friedman was the original researcher. Mm-hmm. And he broke the story, or the story broke as a result of his work, I believe it was 1978.
Right.
In the late 80s, Don Schmidt was, and he had been working at the Center for UFO Studies for Alan Hynek for over 10 years.
Really?
Hynek had passed away by 86, I believe. And Schmidt and asked Dr. Kevin Randall to take a look at the Roswell case. And they initially made their first trip to Roswell back in 89. And their research progressed from then. They worked together till the mid-90s. And then Schmidt ended up, or Donald Raymond Schmidt, I should say, teamed up with Tom Carey, I believe about the late 90s, and it produced three or four, maybe perhaps five books on the Roswell case. Pretty grounded researcher. He's a personal friend, but I'm trying not to be biased here. Pretty grounded researcher. Unlike a lot of researchers in the UFO community, he has the ability to admit when he's wrong, and he has done that on several occasions, and has debunked some evidence which previously was in favor of the extraterrestrial theory for Roswell. He found some witnesses with Randall. I can think of Frank Kaufman offhand, who testified about certain things. And through his own efforts, Schmidt proved that testimony wrong years later. So he's not a biased researcher. So, and a good friend. So,
But you mentioned the extraterrestrial theory for the Roswell event. Here's how much I know about this. I'd always assumed that that was kind of the only strain of thought out there about this particular event, because it was just so bizarre. But it sounds like, is it actually the main thought about Roswell in the UFO community, that it was extraterrestrial?
This is interesting. I'm going to get negative emails from what I'm about to say.
Well,
there's a whole list of explanations. Some individuals believe the mogul balloon theory, which the Air Force put out. Some individuals believe it was Nazi technology. Some believe it was a regular weather balloon. Some believe nothing out of the ordinary happened at Roswell. There's a couple of members in my group. I remember writing a poll question in my group, UFO Real, and that's a cheap plug for my group, but a couple of individuals stated in a poll question they believe nothing transpired at Roswell at all.
Oh,
in any way, shape, or form.
You know, I actually remember that now that you're saying that.
Which is interesting, yeah. But what has happened over the years is that, yes, there's not a physical piece of the craft. So the extraterrestrial theory cannot be proven as such. But the vast majority of the evidence, quality testimony, the reaction of the military, the coverage of the newspapers, all the other possibilities to explain Roswell have kind of been debunked. All that's left is extraterrestrial. In my mind, it's mainly, okay, you've got military testimony, a core of which is held up under intense scrutiny. You have the reaction of the military. The military reacted like they had never come across this scenario at all.
They didn't know what they were doing. They got there and they're like, oh my God. And then you see a coordinated response a few days later.
Yeah, so my feeling is that the evidence, that's all kind of left on the table, extraterrestrial. But again, you can't prove it without a piece of crap. That's what Frank Kimbler is attempting to find, a piece of physical evidence. But it's still an open case. I think among the researchers, they have varying percentages as far as how much they feel extraterrestrial. And Don Schmidt actually is around middle range there. He's not totally convinced it is.
He's not totally. Yeah. That's interesting.
No. I think it's certainly the most common or the most popular theory explaining Roswell.
The ET theory. Yeah. Well, that's certainly what's associated with Roswell in the popular consciousness.
a little bit. Yeah.
Hence
the festival.
Hence the festival and the whole Roswell Museum setup. You mentioned that it was an open case a minute ago and that people are still looking for hard evidence. Now, this Roswell crash was a little while ago. It seems like every year that passes, the odds of really figuring out what happened there are getting slimmer. But is that the case, or or are we finding new stuff all the time about
From a testimony standpoint, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Applying my own standard, I only accept first-hand testimony. I don't accept anything else other than that.
Right.
And so first-hand witnesses are pretty much all gone.
Exactly.
So you're left with the acquirement of military documents, which hasn't happened, although there's a few documents. The infamous MJ-12 documents come to mind, which refer to Roswell or refer to it in a kind of a roundabout way.
Right.
Yeah, newspaper coverage. You have the military's reaction. I keep going back to that because the military acted like it wasn't an average day event. You don't close roads off to recover a weather balloon. You don't send the weather balloon to Wright Field to have a reverse engineer. Because mm-hmm. even by the Air Force's own explanation, they feel as they're advocating that it's a mobile balloon. Well, that was a secret operation, but none of the technology was secret. It was over-the-counter materials. So there's no reason to send that to get reverse engineered. That makes no sense.
Right.
What does make sense is if something out of the ordinary crashed, you would send it to Wright Field, and certainly something extraterrestrial qualifies. But again, you can't prove it. It can be very frustrating, you know, but it's now a quest to recover physical evidence. And I think some could still be out there. You're right. It does get harder as time goes on, but pushing forward. So,
in fact, I think you mentioned that the last time we were on here, that there were potentially materials from Roswell that were snapped up by the Air Force, you said?
It was the Army Air Force at the time, yeah,
mm-hmm.
when this happened.
That are, you know, potentially sitting in a warehouse somewhere or wherever they end up. I don't know.
the testimony is that the Army Air Force sent personnel out there to recover the debris that was left. And it's a safe assumption that it was sent to Wright Field.
Right.
On the way to Wright Field, it was a stop off at Carswell Air Force, or Carswell Field, I should say. But when a craft, let's eliminate extraterrestrial. Let's just talk about an airplane. When an airplane blows up or crashes,
mm-hmm.
there's innumerable numbers of small pieces of metal that are embedded in the ground. There's no way to pick up every single piece of metal. There isn't. Some metal will wash away with storms. Some metals will be covered up by plants and be deposited in cracks and crevices in the ground. It's kind of, you know, you look at the universe, what are the chances that we're the only life in the universe with all the billions of planets? Probably zero. There has to be someone else out there, obviously, because the number is dictated. Well, you look at the Roswell case, there are probably millions of pieces of metal or whatever the ship was made out of, or whatever crash there was made out of. Did they pick up every single piece? Probably not.
So there might be still some just outstanding out in nature, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, they're probably extremely small and
difficult to identify, to say the least.
Yeah, Frank Cooper has recovered 8 to 12 small pieces of metallic substance, which are somewhat anomalous in nature, but testing is not cheap.
And he's
found some things that are slightly anomalous as far as the levels of the elements contained within them. So that doesn't prove they're extraterrestrial, but they don't really belong out there. So he's going in that direction. That's a good way to go. So.
Right. We had a researcher on a few weeks ago talking about the Bob White artifact, talking about the difficulty of testing to see.
Yeah, it is.
I imagine that's only a much larger concern when you're talking about minute metal shards rather than a whole object.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess from the standpoint of how large or how small these pieces are, when you're testing these pieces, you don't have a lot to test.
Right, exactly.
They're smaller than a pinky nail. But that's really because the witnesses are passing away so quickly because of Father Time. The only angle to take is an attempt to recover something that was out there, test it, and find out if it's an isotope of something that's not of this Earth. That's really the only angle that's left.
Right. Yeah.
Unless documents are released all of a sudden, then the government is not going to do that. So.
You mentioned that they were that the pieces recovered were somewhat anomalous. What does that mean in this case?
Well, he had them tested to find out the levels of iron, aluminum, titanium, phosphate, the different elements that are contained within, and he compared them to normal everyday items that were present in 1947. Aluminum cans, military buttons, bullets, things that may have been out in the field in the late 40s because it was near an airbase. Well, it was 76 miles from an airbase, but things that were existent in the late 40s. And the metal does not match up to the bullets at the time. It doesn't match up to aluminum cans at the time. It doesn't... It's just slightly anomalous, but it's not anomalous enough to really jumps out and grabs you.
Right, it's not a smoking gun.
Yeah, so
and there's been
it continues. More testing needs to be done, but Frank Kimbler goes out there on his summertime. He's off during the summer, so he goes out there on his own time and on his own dollar to do these things, and he gets a little funding from the museum.
Mm-hmm.
But these tests are not cheap, and he's got a family and a wife to support. So it's it's a scenario where he does it when he can. But again, that would be done if the scientific community would treat this seriously. We would have access to all these facilities to test these things. But that's not the case. So we have to do that out of our own pocket, and that's not cheap.
Okay. We're right at the next commercial break here. When you come back, we're talking to William Pullen about the UFOs.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the perfect fit of your favorite pair of jeans, the nap-inducing powers of your trusty recliner, and the tried and true performance of a new Rood home heating system. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance today, 530-221-2642. At Alliance Heating and Air, everybody calls us.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new lines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
Are you struggling financially? Swallowed up in debt? Are you looking to buy a house but are not sure of your credit standing?
What does that credit score even mean?
Why are there three different bureaus?
What score is most important?
Looking for a local expert?
Give me, Joe Radola, a call. Your credit affects everything from borrowing money to landing that perfect job. With over 40 years of providing financial services, I am committed to helping you achieve your goal. I can provide you with full credit report and in-depth review for only $25. Let me provide you with the tools you need to improve your credit standing and your financial freedom. Give me a call today, Joe Radola, 941-3021, or on the web at jrdebtconsulting.com. Your local choice in credit repair.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Welcome back. This is Radio Wasteland. We're speaking with William Pullen about Roswell, all things Roswell-related, and UFOs. You know, a while back we had another ufologist on who we respected quite a bit. I cannot for the life of me remember who it was. I was going back through the archives to try to figure it out. But
was it Dennis Balthaser?
I don't think so.
Okay. You guys had him on a few weeks back.
Yeah, no, this was last year. This was earlier show. But so they mentioned, we just happened to bring up Roswell, and they mentioned that they were somewhat dismayed that Roswell had such an important place in the public consciousness because they felt there were other UFO sightings since then that were more convincing or more significant. But what's your feeling on that? Does the Roswell incident sort of deserve the reputation it has as the number one UFO incident people think of in the United States?
I think it's an important one, but the trouble is it's so far in the past.
Exactly.
It's certainly the elephant in the room. It takes a lot of the air out of the balloon. But there's a lot of quality cases that are much closer in time, that have testimony, that have some physical evidence that need to be looked at and have been looked at. But it kind of is what it is. I mean, in my own group, I don't really cover anything Roswell related until about a month before the festival.
Right.
Because of that scenario. I try to attack other issues and other cases and it not ignore, but really kind of push aside Roswell until the festival arrives because it gets enough press as it is. And then, so I can see that point that is true. It does get a lot more coverage, or it's known more widely to the public than other cases, certainly. But it's still a quality case, but it's just one of several anomalous events that have occurred that don't really have a concrete answer.
Right.
I guess that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It seems like one of the things that sets the Roswell incident apart is really the fact that the government and military officials didn't have as clear of a plan for dealing with this kind of situation at the time, and now they do. And
agreed.
So their reaction is a little bit more telling. Do you think that's true?
I see that's a fair assessment, because I agree with that. You know, there's the name of the case is escaping me, but there's a case dated from the early 40s of a crash, UFO crash. And I don't feel that crash is legitimate. Because one, there's a shortage of witness testimony firsthand and physical evidence. Two, if that crash, the name escapes me now. I'll probably remember it tomorrow. But if that crash was legitimate, I would think the military's reaction to Roswell would have been different because
right.
The crash had already occurred.
Interesting.
But clearly, the military acted like they didn't know how to handle this scenario. I think that's one of the stronger. But again, that's not evidence per se. That's a feeling. We need evidence.
Right.
But it is what it is. I still think it's a strong case. It's not the amount of evidence strong evidence for Roswell is not as voluminous as it used to be. In the late 80s, early 90s, there were a ton of witnesses. It was a very robust case. Now it's still strong, but it's not as robust. And that's because of quality work from guys like Don Schmidt and Tom Carey and Stan Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to weed out some testimony that was not legitimate, but there's still that solid core of evidence that something anomalous happened. So it's still important.
Yeah. What are some of the other cases that, you know, what are the Roswells of the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s? You know?
Well, there's the Socorro landing of April 64, which is an ultra witness case. It did have physical evidence. It involved Lonnie Zamora, who was a police officer. There was, of course, Rendlesham Forest in December of 80, which has been written about and is still a lively case. The Phoenix Lights of 1997.
Yes.
Stephenville, Texas. So all these cases are much closer in time. So certainly at least the witnesses, the majority of them are still alive to examine, to interview. And there's a lot of other cases that don't get as much press per se, but that have occurred since Roswell. I mean, we're talking, you know, 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, that deserve a lot of examination. Although I am troubled, though, that as of late, there hasn't been a really big flap. There hasn't been a really big UFO events as of late. The last one I can recall is Stephenville in 2008. The last one that was really, really grab you and say, huh, what's going on? There hasn't been one since. And that's interesting by itself. So.
Yeah, well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. As we do, I'd like to give you a chance to tell our audience how they can find out a bit more about you and how they can find a bit more about UFOs, if this is something they're interested in but don't really know about.
We can look up my group and page on Facebook. Is called You For Real, A Historical Review. The group is where I do my work, do case summaries, book reviews, poll questions, basically promoting an exchange of ideas and comments from people, a cordial exchange. That's where they can look me up and find me there. The page, which has a corresponding same name, is where I advertise for other individuals I know in the UFO community to help promote their efforts and go from there. So that's where everyone can find me.
Okay. Before we finish up here, is there anything you would say to anyone who might be listening who is not very familiar with the evidence for UFOs and is maybe pretty skeptical? Is there anything you would say to someone like that to maybe sway them? Or
you know, if an individual is skeptical about the scenario, I think apply yourself. Go to a library. Go to different databases, different blog spots that present objective amounts of evidence. Kevin Randall has a great blog spot available. You can read the numbers of books that have been put out. And just educate themselves as far as what the data shows. And if they still don't believe in the reality of the UFO phenomenon, then at least they've made the effort to educate themselves. And that way that conclusion is at least an informed one. And go from there. But I think it pays dividends to simply know what's going on, know what's been reported, and make up your own mind as to what actually may be the cause of it. So that's a good thing.
All right. Well, William, as always, it's been a pleasure here. We're going to do a bonus segment after the show that archival listeners can find on our website. You've been listening to William Pullen on Radio Wasteland.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Reading. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.